This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Oh, I didn't see you come in. Drop it. So, thanks to Cenk Uygur not being here, we have a panel that's even more powerful than usual. Wow. He's not here to say anything about it, so I can say pretty much whatever I want. I'm Johnny Arola. Mark Thompson is back in studio.
When daddy's away, you really get mouthy, I've noticed.
Yeah, when daddy's away, we say things we'll someday forget.
It's like the Muppet Babies up in here, yeah?
Exactly. Well, at least as funny as the Muppet Babies, we have two stand-ups in studio. Ben Glebe, for the first time with me at the very least.
First time with you, second time on the show.
Then good to have you back. And Francesca Fiorentini is here as well.
Hi.
Always good to have you here. After co-hosting the Damage Report this morning with me.
Indeed.
Here on the main show.
Took a power nap of 5 hours.
In the middle.
Everything is powerful around here.
Everything's powerful.
Very
well,
impressive.
You know, she's flown down from San Francisco, so she's jet lagged and everything, but now she's feeling better.
The time zones are crazy on the West Coast.
They really mess with you, yeah. So we've got a lot to talk about today. Obviously, we're going to be talking about Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. Who's coming for it? You know, some fictional villains, some real villains. We've got both for you.
And you got fictional villains now as well?
There are some, yes.
Great.
Yes.
Great.
Fictional villains being pushed by real villains, actually.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we're going to have a little talk about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, because there have been some attacks against her recently that appear a little bit hypocritical, considering some political context that we will, of course, provide. And then later on the show, we've got two awesome stories for you. One is a Republican politician being very honest and forthcoming about what she actually believes about those protesting in the NFL. And then also, the Bank of America has decided that, you know what, they want to get in on a little bit of that border action and pretend that some people just aren't citizens, even if they are. So we'll be talking about all of that over the course of this hour. Very excited for it.
Hot border action.
So much. So much so hot, yes. And distressing. But we're going to be starting off with a little bit of Donald Trump. Trump's speeches are full of moments that make you just stop and think a little bit about what he might mean. But today we've got one that stands out even for him. It has to do with Medicare. Let's listen.
And they want to raid Medicare to pay for socialism. Somehow, I don't see Indiana being the next Venezuela. I just don't see it.
I agree with him. I don't see it either, actually.
The guy in the green in the back is like, wait a minute. Go with it. Peter, you drove all this way to a rally. You said you were going to go.
Yeah.
But you know this makes no sense.
Yeah, I honestly wonder if they are sweetening the crowd response sounds on these rallies, because the shot of the people behind Trump, he's barely ever getting more than 10% of people actually laughing at these jokes. Everybody else is like, oh, I wanted to come, but I don't know if I can get on board with anything he's saying.
He was probably tackled in the next, in like 5 minutes. I mean, honestly, we talked about this earlier this morning on John's show, The Damage Report, but the idea that like raiding Medicare to pay for socialism is like saying, they just want to raid the fridge to make your dinner. These women, they're just raiding the fridge, making the dinner. Where'd the food go, huh?
First of all, that sounds amazing, and I'm hungry now.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It was puzzling, though. Explain to me what, oftentimes you can really just work yourself up in knots trying to figure out what Trump was actually speaking about. But here I really was a little confused. I mean, it struck me as something sort of the leading edge of a talking point that we're going to hear more and more. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I can't decode this easily.
Well, I think that you're sort of right. I think, I don't know if it's the leading edge of a talking point, but certainly of a narrative, in that Because we have these very popular up and coming, in some cases DSA backed candidates, socialism as a term is out there. And unfortunately, as with most other terms and political terms in America, we don't know what they mean. We don't know history, we don't know geography, we don't know political science, we don't know psychology. I could go on. But we don't understand those things. And so Donald Trump can say effectively whatever he wants about socialism. The only information that most of the people in the crowd have is that they know that some socialist countries 40 or 50 years ago that they're familiar with were failures. And they might see some bad news about Venezuela in the news, which is, of course, why he referenced it there. And if they
watch Fox
News. By
the way, that's the only information that Trump has also.
Exactly. Yeah. If you ask Donald Trump to define socialism, what do you think he would say? How specific of a definition can you get?
Ironically, because socialized medicine is part of democratic socialism, the likes of which I think a lot of candidates are running on, and that Bernie Sanders inspired the country on, which is more of a Scandinavian democratic socialism. Like, if you strip all that away, the socialism that's left, which is like big statues and military parades, like all that stuff is stuff Trump would love. Like, yeah. He would actually want to pay for that.
Well, to be fair, that's socialism is not that, right? It's socialism, sure. That's fascism.
Filtered
and
that
usually those right. statues go up under autocrats and all this sort of thing. But it's a fair point that that he's clueless as to what socialism actually is. And even, you know, communism and socialism are thrown around as awful terms, and you can say, well, they're awful in their purest forms, but there are aspects of socialism that are being applied with the subsidies to major corporations in this country. And we have socialism here, but it's for the rich in large measure. So any real substantive conversation associated with socialism, you know, has to include that.
Or just recently with farmers, because of Trump's tariffs, he decides to just redistribute money to help make up for his own platforms. Here's how I think he would define socialism at a rally, just to get people riled up. He'd say, socialism, they're going to take your money, they're going to take your hard-earned money, and they're going to give it to the elites. It's called upward reverse socialism, and it's very dangerous.
It's like a trickle-up. It's a spilling upwards. It's like the mystery spot.
Yeah. It was like if I take this coffee and it would just float into the air towards the elites. And America doesn't want that. And that's a good argument. It's a solid, reasoned argument.
Well,
if you're insane.
It gets you applause. Look, when you look at these speeches, and you should always keep this in mind, I think, when we look at these Trump speeches, we should remember, especially when it comes to decoding them, he speaks in applause lines, you know what I mean? He's looking for cheers. So even that line that kind of doesn't make any sense, you don't want Indiana to become the next Venezuela, do you? It's sort of like, no, I don't. You know, he gets the response, and that sort of congregation responding to him all the time leads him to say these things that are frankly pretty absurdist, but they do get a reaction.
Right. He realizes that the first half of his sentence somewhere in his brain doesn't make full sense, so he just goes for a joke in the back half. He's literally like, they're going to raid Medicare for socialism, and nobody wants Lex Luthor to win. And everybody's like, you're right, we don't.
I also think the fact that we only have Venezuela to point to as a sort of failed state is indicative of just how afraid the right is for socialist ideas catching on. I think Venezuela and the United States couldn't be farther in terms of their similarities. They are so different from one another. Venezuela is not the United States. They do not have the amount of money that we have. They are not a hegemon. They are, you know, they... And actually, and of course, yes, the economy is so screwed there. People are, you know, digging in trash. But last I checked, people are also digging in trash down in downtown LA.
Yeah.
So we don't ever talk about the failures of capitalism. We only talk about the failures of socialism. And we say one to one, the U.S. is Venezuela, and it's going to be the exact same. And we're going to get, I hope we get a Caribbean coast, if that's the case.
I'm glad that you brought that up, because they have this one example of socialism failing. And I think it's not a hypothetical. We can come up with an example of capitalism leaving millions of people behind. Of, you know, what if you had a system that for decades wages were entirely stagnant? And in fact, you just lost out year after year due to inflation. What if you had a system of healthcare where tens of millions of Americans don't end up with any health insurance? What if you had that? And then everybody gets scared in the crowd. And then they look around, they realize they're living in that country right now. That's an example that you can provide. And here's one of the bad things for Donald Trump. So he says to the audience, socialism is really bad, and they boo. They do boo for now, because for a very long time, the only place that they've heard about socialism or socialist policies is on Fox News, delivered with the keen historical insight of people like Laura Ingraham and Tucker Carlson. And there's been no counter argument up until now. But unfortunately, they screwed up because they allowed people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to get elected. People who go on shows like Stephen Colbert and The Daily Show and talk about economic dignity and talk about being able to live a life in accordance with you know, fundamental human dignity at the end
overrated,
of the day.
It's overrated, honestly.
Overrated?
Yeah. Dignity, who needs dignity? I feel like a lot of times it's nice to go through life like not being dignified. It keeps you on your toes.
Totally.
It's just a good, I'm just presenting the other side. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's good to cover both. Both.
Dignity's overrated, you think, Ben?
Yes, it's overrated. Okay. I mean, if you can get it, sure, it's nice work if you can get it. But I'm just saying, is it necessary to live in America? Maybe not. Kind of according to Trump, I don't think so. I think it's important to be able just to push whatever program you want. The scariest part about it is that we just lack any sort of, not only context, but just any sort of measure between what could happen and what will happen. You mentioned one word and it's as though we're going to overnight become something. Mm-hmm. You're not going to become a socialist country because you embrace certain aspects, certain positive aspects of socialist ideas.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean tomorrow America is going to be distributing everybody's wealth equally across the land. That's not what it's going to be. But the fact that we don't have any, like you said, any concept of what these terms even mean, mm-hmm. it makes you be able to say something like they're going to raid Medicare, which is one of our closer to socialist programs, to pay for socialism, and people root on that thought. It's just, it's a nonsensical discord in your brain that I don't, if we can't even have terms that we know what they mean, there's just no way to have an intelligent discourse.
Well, this term has been captured for propaganda, right? Socialism, communism, these are terms they can use, and it's used in a propagandist's way. So that's why they use socialism. They've weaponized socialism, even though, as we've said, socialism is used to bail out Wall Street. That's a form of socialism, mm-hmm. right? And for the price supports, as you say, for those farmers who are suffering from the trade policy. So socialism is there in different ways. We don't call it socialism. We call it bailouts or whatever. But there are aspects of this socialism already very well a part of this economy.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, if corporations are now people, I wish we were able to just shame them, like call them welfare queens, you know, like they've demonized right. you know, African-Americans and people on welfare, or anyone, not just African-Americans, all people on welfare. But like, we never hear that. We need to shame corporations as people. You lazy bums, you know, pay your workers fairly, give them health care. I don't know how people yell at the homeless. I'm just trying.
You clearly have not berated the homeless enough.
No, I got to work on that.
I'm not sure, but I believe that Bernie Sanders put together a video of CEOs where he was using terms like that in regard to them, those who had gotten large amounts of government funds.
Oh, that's great.
I don't know for sure. Maybe somebody can find it and tweet us about that. But I do want to transition to a related topic. Donald Trump is attempting to convince you that socialists are coming to raid Medicare to pay for the apocalypse or whatever. But the funny thing is there are actually people talking about cutting Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security, and they're not even hiding it. It's not like you have to sort of root through all these documents, file Freedom of Information Act requests. They're just advertising it with headlines like this. So House GOP plan would cut Medicare, Medicaid to balance budget. Well, you're not going to see the dates on these, but these span actually more than 6 months. This next one,
but
Paul
look at
Ryan,
the tulips.
Look at the
on
tulips.
On the plus
looks
side,
nice.
Tulips.
Here's some opinion columnists saying they should scale back Medicare and Social Security. Conservatives obviously getting very excited about this. Top Republicans are already talking about cutting Medicare and Social Security next. This is after the ACA and tax battles. Paul Ryan makes it official. Republicans are coming after Medicare next. And by the way, if you have the misfortune to have been paying attention to Paul Ryan through the course of his life, his first words were, no more entitlements.
Yes,
has been his mission. The only reason
he was literally sucking on a teat. I mean, how ironic is that? Thank you.
So good.
Thank you so much.
And really,
put that away, that's a bailout.
Uh-huh.
So look, that is why he is in government. He was born, he read Ayn Rand, and then he came for the social safety net. And that's the story for most Republicans in office right now.
But he worked at McDonald's, John, for a summer.
Did he really?
Like a year, maybe. No, that's
McDonald's his line. Is the reason people need Medicare when they get older.
It's true.
I mean, he set them up. That's a real Ponzi scheme right there. Just make them eat unhealthy fast food and then yank the health care away when they get old and sick.
Yeah.
Not cool. And for Medicaid, try to gut that program. These people literally all they can afford to eat is McDonald's. And then you're going to say, we're going to make you eat food that's going to kill you. and we're not going to take care of you. It's a double whammy. We're slamming, but at least we're not going to be coming at you with socialism. Mm-hmm.
And this is why Paul Ryan has been such an effing coward for this entire administration. And every time Speaker of the House is looked to stand up for his party to say that, no, we don't side with white supremacy, and we don't think that the neo-Nazis marching on the street were good people or that some were good people, he's totally silent because this is what he wants. He wants to actually cut so-called entitlements, which I think we need to change the name for because entitlement is really being able to own more than one yacht. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what crawled up Paul Ryan's butt and died so many years ago, whether it was the sucking on the teat of his mom. But like, I feel like 20 years ago, 30 years ago, like a homeless guy called him like, hey, white boy, you got a quarter? And he was like, no. And then like, that was it. It was done. It's like Paul Ryan turned.
Well, as John says, though, you know, it's the Ayn Rand thing. He really he bought it hook, line, and sinker, mm-hmm. and he's just been pursuing it, and that's his jihad, and he's been waiting for it, and now he can begin it. And I think you're very much right. You know, he's so quiet all through this administration thus far, and all of a sudden he steps forward when it comes to these programs. But there's some the devil may be in the details here because I don't know that they're going to be able to get away with this. But
you really think so?
You think
in advance of the midterms or at all?
Well, first of all, the timing to announce in advance of the midterms seems odd to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, is it you see it as a political win? I don't. Why would you advertise?
I mean, politics is obviously about more than one thing. In terms of getting votes, I don't think it's a win. But
well,
in terms of getting
about.
Donations from corporate donors, I think it could very much be a win.
Right, and that's
the
why
rich
he's
will
picking,
donate.
He's picking and choosing where he's talking about. He's not giving big policy speeches. He's saying it on like fringe conservative radio shows,
exactly.
And that's where he's plugging it in. But I think that we just have to be able to again have broader conversations and broader opinions about the spectrum of what can make success in this country and realize that it's always going to be a combination of factors. So like even mentioning Ayn Rand, like I love Ayn Rand. I like her general way of looking at the world. I disagree with her when it goes all the way to saying because people should have their sense of self come from within and should pull themselves up from their own bootstraps, you should never help people. That's where I think she gets too extreme. You can still help people when they can't bring themselves up, when they need the help. So you could still satisfy Paul Ryan or a conservative philosophy of let's make sure people have every ability to take care of themselves, only help them when they need it. Make sure there are certain common sense checks so they're not abusing the system, and just please everybody with it. Find a way to make the entire country happy while also having just a safety net there.
Sure.
At a circus, you have a net, a safety net under performers just in case they fall to their death.
This is definitely a circus, so we do need a net.
But I think there's something disingenuous.
A little sweaty, I apologize.
Oh, yeah, no worries here. There's something.
Thank you.
We got to take a break.
You offered.
There's something disingenuous to me, though, about the whole, like, hey, it's okay to, like, you know. I mean, I haven't read Ayn Rand, but I think that the ideology of free market thinking and just, like, I think total libertarian, like, thinking is actually disingenuous because the people who are supporting Paul Ryan and these powerful Republicans are big right-wing think tanks. They are private foundations, the Bradley Foundation, the Koch brothers, and the Americans for Prosperity, and so many other dark money groups and think tanks and 501c4s or whatever they're going as now. And all they want is tax breaks. That's all they want. They don't want to actually pay their workers fair wages. They don't want them to have anything when they retire. But they want, again, all the socialism for them.
To end subsidies for oil companies. Don't want to end subsidies for farm workers. It suits big business, they're all fine for it.
Yes.
And that's sort of what I meant with like an Ayn Rand objectivist philosophy. I think it actually is a really good empowering philosophy on an individual basis. On an individual basis, you should be able to realize that like your self-worth comes from yourself. But I think when you take it to governmental policy, it doesn't make sense because there's no system that could work in a purely free market capitalistic system.
I've read quite a bit of Ayn Rand. My principal problem with her is that I think she's genuinely a bad writer who needs to learn to cut 30% out of every book.
I'm surprised you got through one of the books.
No, I mean, I've read all the big ones, including the more philosophical ones like The Virtue of Selfishness and things like that.
She's got a book called The Virtue of Selfishness?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes. I mean, obviously, you have to read it to understand what she's getting at there.
Sure.
My issue with, in terms of like, so you mentioned, you know, you have to have checks, obviously, and you do. And we do. So that's my issue, right, is that the reason that Republicans push things like voter fraud and the need to drug test people on welfare is not because in either of those cases we have a genuine problem, but to cause people to distrust massive programs, right, regardless of what is actually going on. And they're very successful at that. And again, as with what we were talking about earlier with socialism, there's no counter argument. There's no, you're not constantly having Democrats go on MSNBC and say, hey, did you know that people on welfare don't actually use drugs at higher rates than people that aren't on, right, welfare? I don't hear that every night. I don't, right, hear them saying, hey, did you know that you're more likely to be struck by lightning while being bitten by a shark than actually commit voter fraud in this country? I don't hear that because it's kind of a ridiculous metaphor. But you get what I'm saying.
No, that actually happened to me one time on the way to the polls. So that was a really weird day.
It's unlikely.
The hat trick.
Yeah.
Of course, you're right. And I feel as though what they've done is they've begun this propaganda war. I'm talking about the right. And they got through the huge tax cut. I mean, that was almost done under cover of night. It was done so quickly. I mean, the ink was not even literally dry on the page. Mm-hmm. And now this next, I think these are the early drumbeats of what they're really going to try to do. And they must really be committed to it because I'm just astounded by this timing. I mean, again, I don't think it's going to be received well by voters. Okay, yeah, so donors will receive it well. But I think this vote becomes critical, and they can't afford to lose a lot of votes in, yeah, some of these places.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, the reason that we did first the Trump thing, the Dems are coming for Medicare, and then all of these Republicans, every influential Republican is pushing for this. They might not be pushing hard enough to get it done before the midterms, but that's clearly their goal, is at some point the 25% to 36% of the country that is still strong Trump supporters, they have to, like, doublethink shouldn't work universally. Like, if you hear, isn't it terrible how they're coming for your Medicare, and then we're coming for your Medicare, at some point, shouldn't that cause you to question this person? I understand, you know, you're in that culture, whatever, and you like him. And I get why you like him. He speaks to white identity and all of that. But in terms of things like Medicare, Medicaid, these very fundamental programs that, despite the way Republicans like to pitch them as being something that only black and brown people use, we know predominantly they're going to people like in the background of his crowds. Mm-hmm. They should realize that the real villain coming for those are the Republican politicians that they've been taught to support.
That's the point. I wonder, right, if this will really get done for that reason, because, yeah, these guys are all cashing those checks, the very checks that they're saying
they're
you're not going
to be Medicare.
Getting. Exactly. Older white people are the ones on Medicare in large numbers.
But just like the ACA and how that was folded into the tax cuts, like I disagree whoever said that like they're gonna roll it out. I don't know. I think this whole thing is like they're not gonna roll this out.
You think it'll be more hidden?
It'll be absolutely hidden. I don't think it's going to be like this, yeah, is not like, hey, you're gonna get $200 back in 20 years. Like, right, that doesn't, there's nothing beneficial here. So I think they're gonna keep it under wraps. And then again, and this is why I think racial solidarity and anti-racism is so important, is that it's just easy to blame black and brown people, like John, you were saying. And that and divide us and move into tribalism and back to the sort of like socialist conversation. I do think we are looking at a socialism or barbarism moment. Either we go into our, right, fiefdoms and our tribes and blame others for our problems and are afraid of one another and are afraid of voter fraud and are afraid of, you know, undocumented immigrants killing citizens at en masse and MS-13 and Antifa, or we actually take care of people's needs and see how that works out.
But like this is also, I mean, 100%, but I think, again, you're right, with the push towards increased bifurcated tribalism where we keep just trying to put each other at each other's throats is such the poison. It's the most classic poison that politicians use to try to just keep all the power and money for themselves. And it's, mm-hmm, so frightening that people haven't caught on to this simple trick yet, right? I mean, not only are they always dividing us as liberal and conservative, as Democrat, Republican, even red and blue, they color code us. That's the exact colors of Bloods and Crips. I mean, they've created it to put us at, that's each other's point, throats. Like, maybe we'd have a more chill political discourse if we rebranded the parties like to peach and lime green or something. Uh-huh. Maybe it would calm things down.
I want to be peach.
You want to be peach? Yeah. I'll do lime green and we can be friends.
I hate you already.
Okay, you see what happens?
I like that map more, that's for sure.
I think one of them used to be green, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, at some point.
Not the green party either.
No. Someone wrote an article where it was when it was standardized, but before that it was actually more varied.
But that's, so aside from the obvious point that you pointed out, that it's insane that you can at the same time at one side of your mouth say Democrats are coming for Medicare and then saying we're actually going to take your Medicare just as long as the Democrats don't do it.
Right.
Yeah.
The problem is when you allow, like you were saying, to demonize programs and the people who are recipients of it, it just so clouds the actual issue. It takes you into a small instance of abuse of a program and makes it as though that's the entire problem with the system. And so if you can just keep the issue about, look, we're all Americans. We all have one country, one life, one happiness that we're trying to achieve for ourselves, for our families, for our communities. And you say, how do we get there? We have programs we've all agreed on that are the law of the land. How can we reform them in common sense ways to get rid of abuse, but still help people? How can we make sure the thing that you want, the thing you're cheering not to get rid of, doesn't get taken care of? But we just allow this demonization in our politics where we are, like you said, we have fake.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic. Or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Evildoers that we're trying to fight. There's not even a target to take on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Last word on this Medicare thing, at least for me, would be I think that it's going to be very, very hard to, you know, Medicare was created largely because people are 65 years of age and older couldn't get insurance. I mean, because insurance companies didn't want to insure older people who were more prone to illness. You're going to have that same problem. Yeah. That's not going away. So again, a lot of those people at that rally fall into that category, and I just don't know. And it's masquerading as, well, we want to bring back the free market so that now you can shop for your own insurance company. You're going to do better. I mean, that's what they're talking about already. Yeah. And the truth is, we played that tune already, and nobody could dance to it. I mean, in other words, we couldn't find insurance companies that would insure us unless the fees were exorbitant.
Yeah. And it never went away, like as if the Affordable Care Act was anywhere near socialized medicine. It was.
No, that was an insurance company grab.
It's just an option. Yeah. And then again, also it shows how we can't ever think just one step beyond. We can't use our brains one step beyond what's just specifically spoken by a politician to us. So the way they also try to push through their plan to gut our entitlement programs are to say, well, we won't touch current recipients. And then we think, oh, we have no ability to look forward in this country. And so we think people that are on are like, okay, I'm safe. I can support it then. But we literally don't think, but I'm going to be old soon too.
Yeah.
If it's so important to them, maybe I'm going to need that when I get older.
Right. But millennials just live on avocado toast and like pictures of corgis.
Strong point. That's a strong point.
It's a healthy diet. That
selfies, that thing fuel your soul a little bit.
Yeah.
The flash and the selfie, I get regenerized. Regenerized?
I think that's a word.
Thank you.
Enough for me. It'll work for Sarah Palin.
So regeneration.
Could you get ready with video 4? Because I have one other point I want to make. Donald Trump wants to convince you that the Dems are coming for Medicare. And with the Dem Party of 10 years ago, perhaps they would. But things are changing now. And the Republicans are the ones talking about coming after Medicare. But how are they going to actually try to sell the American people on that? How are they going to message about the need to cut these programs that are incredibly popular? Well, I don't know for sure. And there are a number of politicians who are going to do it. But we do have some indication. So if we could play video 4, you're going to see Marco Rubio talking about this.
The argument would be, we can't cut taxes because it will drive up the deficit. That assumes that somehow we can fix the deficit through higher taxes, and we can't. But you also have to bring spending under control, and not discretionary spending. That isn't the driver of our debt. The driver of our debt is the structure of Social Security and Medicare. And if we did that, in combination with growth, you can begin to bring the trajectory of the debt to a responsible and acceptable level. That is the only way forward. So I view tax reform as the economic growth component of it.
Yeah, except that it's not. So they always say that, and we've noticed that since that tax bill has passed, at this almost the same rate that its popularity has gone down, the cost estimates of how much it's going to end up costing us have continually went up. So a bill that was at first going to cost us $1 trillion went to 1.3 to 1.5 to 1.8. The last time I saw it, and I honestly haven't checked the numbers in at least a month or two. And what you saw right there is something that I warned about before the 2016 election, which is, if we allow them to take over the White House, the Senate, and the House, and they pass their big tax cut bill, we are not only screwed in that they get the tax cuts that they want so badly, but we're screwed foundationally on virtually every other possible issue, because the deficits and debt caused by their tax cut bills will be used to justify the cutting of virtually every program imaginable.
Yes.
And that does not just stop at, you know, little rinky-dink programs that cost $20 million here, $5 billion there. It's also Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. They have now taken the rug out from under us. And although there are other progressive ways to balance all of this out while actually accomplishing for the American people what they desire, they are instead going to say, what can we do? Nobody could have predicted that if you suddenly don't take in trillions of dollars, the government will lack trillions of dollars. Mm-hmm. So we have to cut food stamps. We have to take away all that, the aid to the Palestinians that they're going to be talking about in the second hour. We have to cut Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, all of those.
But not the unnecessary and unasked for military budget increases.
That's, well, that's what, can you cut his mic? Don't even mention the military spending.
I never said that.
Rubio's comments exactly are completely wrong from his opening utterance. They were wrong. Mm-hmm. So the idea somehow that if you cut taxes, what was he saying? If you raise taxes, that it will, that then you could begin to address the debt. That assumes this is what Rubio said, that there's some some effect on the debt from tax cuts. There is an effect on the debt. About from tax cuts. You just hear John detail it. Those huge tax cuts, that corporate tax relief and the richest people in America getting a break, that tax relief is going to cost us close to $2 trillion.
It works that way, but it doesn't work the other way around.
It's insanity. I mean, really, in other words, I just couldn't even follow his logic there.
No, it's true. But I also think, and listen, you look at like how much of your tax dollar goes to what in the government, right? And about roughly 30%, a little bit more or less, depending on, you know, like how many wars we're fighting, goes to the military-industrial complex, current and past. And then a huge amount of our dollar, tax dollars, do go to Social Security and Medicare and these kinds of programs. And so from this like very like, you know, economic 101, just looking at a graph like, oh my God, like Social Security is huge. Okay, what are we not then factoring in? What do people gain when they are insured as elderly people, when they are insured as poor people, right? When they are able to have their medical costs taken care of. We are saving, and this is how we've done the numbers. The Koch brothers have done the numbers for us, thank you. That actually having an expansion of Medicare will save the American people. But you can't see that. You don't see healthy people. You only see the crazy person or the person who's like not well, right? You only see when someone has a problem or when there is violence in a community. When everything's chill, it's like, huh, I wonder what were the building blocks of a nation that created a safe community, you know? Yeah. It wasn't armed guards, you know, it was people having an education and being able to, you know, go to the doctor when they need to.
Yeah.
So, and having a job. Right, and these are the things you can't quantify of like, oh, here, how can I show you that this stable middle class family like is being productive? There's no measurement because they're chilling. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You can't quantify that.
Right, exactly like what you were saying. You, it's very hard to go on and just talk about how things are working. That's not a news story. Mm-hmm. So you have to go on there and say things aren't working. But at the same time, it's again this cognitive dissonance that keeps being created. Like take even the classic example of Sarah Palin threatening old people with death panels if Obamacare would pass, right? Mm-hmm. Saying, oh, if you have government healthcare for all, they're gonna have to all of a sudden then decide who gets what medicines. But then people don't think again one step further and say, but if you gut the programs entirely, everybody's going to be on these death panels because there's not going to be any, effectively, there's not going to be any health care to be given.
They exist
so
already.
You create a problem here and then don't realize you're gutting the entire thing here and then it just falls under it. It's kind of a weird gopher world where there's no structure under it.
And the last thing I would say is, look, their end game, and I'm talking about the GOP end game across the board, is to privatize everything. So anything that works in favor of private enterprise, they're all for. And they're going to tell you that it's more cost effective, but it's just simply not. Insurance money is going to be huge money, and they're going to grab it from us once they get rid of these programs. And we've seen what private enterprise does, that you can't trust them on the environment. You can't trust them on keeping prices down for aspirin in a hospital. But that's the end game, to privatize everything.
Yeah.
When is Trump going to make Martin Shkreli his head of the FDA?
That's right, exactly.
Oh, God, don't say that. If he watches this video, we're screwed.
Yeah.
Okay, we do have to take our first break, though. When we come back, the attacks are still flying fast at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. But we've also noticed who isn't being attacked for some similar things. So we're going to show you some videos, a few quotes. We've, as the kids said, we've brought the receipts after this. Welcome back to the Friday Power Panel, everyone. You've sent in some super chats that I'd like to read. First one from Star7434, who said, hey, John, great job on your RT appearance with Larry King. Lit power panel. Thank you. Yeah, it was always good to see Larry King.
I want to hear about that maybe later or another time.
I will.
Sounds like a date.
As most dates are, we're going to talk about Larry King.
It's a dream.
He always really comes out.
Arbuckle123 says, Republicans are using the term socialism to attack Justice Democrats with the same intellectual dishonesty they use when they say evolution is just a theory.
We need to drop calling it the theory of evolution. It's half on everybody.
So confusing. Okay, let's see. And D. Scully says, ignorance about civics and political policy is evident by how many seconds it takes to shift a political discussion to economic theories. Economics is irrelevant. No economic theory leads to democracy. I guess I agree more with that last part than I guess the thing that it's irrelevant. It's not irrelevant, but yes, it's not the only thing that you need to consider.
Right, economic theories are not anything to do with whether you're a democratic nation or not.
Yes. Let's see. I Am Sock says Trump has declared war on the dictionary and English language, picking up from where others have declared wars on info. And Gabby Marie says,
wars from somebody named I Am Sock, by the way.
Oh, my God.
he's declared war on the English language?
But
you think you're Sock?
Socks are smart.
At least I Am Sock knew that he was declaring war. Trump never even knew that he was declaring
wouldn't
war.
Wouldn't admit it anyway. And Gabby Marie says, Trump is saying the left wants to raid Medicare to spread socialism, as opposed to raiding Medicare to spread up trickling tax cuts benefiting people with more yachts than I'm pretty sure John owns shoes. Well, that's where you're wrong. I actually own more shoes than you would think.
And I'm in favor of Medicare for yachts, because sometimes someone like lets a Betsy DeVos yacht go and it gets butt banged up. Who's going to doctor it up? Yeah. I like yacht bandages.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because otherwise yachts go into emergency
yacht
rooms.
Doc.
Yeah, yacht docs.
Yachtdoc.com.
That's an app.
It's a great yacht. Not a lot of people have downloaded that app.
Yeah.
But it does quite well. Okay,
it costs $30,000 to download.
Exactly. You don't need a lot. At that, right.
I did want to let you know, by the way, if you haven't already started following our podcast network, which you can get anywhere you can get podcasts, including the TYT app, which is available on both iPhone and Android, there are new episodes of We the People with Nina Turner. You can listen to those to be motivated, informed, and inspired by one of our nation's top progressive champions, obviously working to help get some of the best progressive and justice Democrats elected around the country. You can check it out at tyt.com/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts to listen to those. Now, before we jump back into our topics, Ben, you were involved in an incident that went viral.
Mm-hmm.
We want to show people this during one of your stand-up routines. We want to show a little bit of that video for everyone.
Ladies, what is with the duck lips? Who has ever seen a woman and been like, yeah, she's hot, but if only she could look more like a duck. I've always wanted to make love to a duck, personally. It's like we love being people, but we could also be ducks. I think that's why I've elected a president who's orange. With a tuft of duck hair on top of his head.
And then minutes later, a man came up to me in the same audience as I was greeting the crowd after the show, and he says to me, you shouldn't talk about the president like that. I loved your act until then. Well, that cut off
the key part there. What was the key part?
The guy comes to me and says, you shouldn't talk about the president around here. You'll end up with a bullet in the back of your head.
Yeah.
You're going to get a bullet in the back of your head, he said to me.
And we'd also, there was a segment where I believe a woman was shouting out to you, don't speak about the Donald.
Yeah, the clip cut out all of the pertinent parts of what we were trying to show.
That's
there.
What we
Are
like
you
to
sure
do
that
here,
she didn't mean like the actual duck? Because you were going hard on the ducks.
That's true.
No, because like, don't speak about Donald like that.
Right. The next line there is that. That's why we like the president whose name is Donald, as in Donald the Dog, of course. And then, yeah, so I shut her down. She was heckling me. And because she wouldn't let me even speak about the president and said you couldn't talk about the Donald, I decided to triple down and go very hard. And then this guy came up to me and he said, you're going to get a bullet in the back of your head. I know a lot of people walking around here who have been shot with bullets, a lot of people carrying around here. You better watch yourself. And it was just insane to me how Trump has effectively weaponized his supporters into trying to squelch any dissenting thought, trying to squelch free speech. And it's the very core of what our country is. So I said to the guy, if that's what has to happen, so be it. I'm not going to stop talking truth to power. I'm not going to stop criticizing our political leaders. I'm not going to stop speaking about the things I believe need to happen. Obviously, I'd prefer not to be shot. Please don't do that.
Yeah. Oh my God. And if you guys haven't seen the video, watch Ben's entire just takedown of this woman so brilliantly.
Thank you.
And then ends it by like, I didn't even want to talk about this. And it was, but you did. And it's like, listen, don't heckle a comic. They will come after you. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and honestly, I think that you, as a comedian and someone who's in clubs and like sees a lot of people actually shying away from a lot of material about Trump, I think, maybe not because they're scared of being politically divisive, but because, you know, you're at a club and you want to laugh and this is comedy. And as someone who does a lot of political comedy, I thought that was brilliant. You didn't back down. And that's exactly what we should be doing. You did it very well. It was funny as
thank
hell.
Thank you. Despite the way the clip was cut, there were jokes in there.
There were jokes. And despite being threatened jokes with your life.
Yeah.
But you're exactly right. It's like every weirdo who, like, didn't have a platform except for whatever bunker they're creating for themselves. And, you know, was like, this tinfoil hat can wait. you know, I'm going to go to a Trump rally. And
you know, I hate to say it because it's so oft said, but, you know, you didn't hear Obama supporters going up to the Ben Glebes of that time going, hey, man, you better lay off Obama. Otherwise, you're going to get, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, you just didn't hear it. There was not, even George Bush, the younger George Bush, who got us into Iraq under false pretense and all of that. The worst at that time was don't criticize the president under the sitting president when we're in a state of war. You'll recall that.
Yeah.
But you didn't. It didn't quite have the hostility, and the enmity here is intense. I
mean, the threat of a bullet in the back of the head. It's not even venom. It's just directly saying, we will kill you if you continue talking this way. And I was an Obama supporter, but I still did jokes on stage criticizing Obama.
Sure.
There were things I didn't like, things about his Afghanistan policy I didn't like. And those jokes would kill. The very premise that Trump, the scariest part of it, is that Trump is becoming effective at what he said when he says what you're seeing and what you're hearing is not what's happening.
Yep.
When he's truly in that way the most Orwellian of leaders, he's so trying to create a trust only in himself, and anybody who dissents from what he says is reality is an enemy of the people. He says it of the media. Obviously, that extends to entertainers. It extends to anybody that is freely trying to keep our government in check, regardless of party. And it's so about him, and he's the one you trust, dear leader. And that's why he admires so much these authoritarian leaders in other parts of the world who can just crack down on dissent. But that's not what America is. So anyone who's a Trump supporter who remembers also that more important than Trump is the country that you love and the country that you came up in that made you so patriotic, the whole purpose of that country is to allow freedoms, to allow your freedom of speech, freedom of the press, the ability to assemble, the ability to speak truth to power. And if you give that up for this guy who's just clearly making stuff up because he wants to be the most powerful ego on the planet, that's a choice you will really sorely regret.
I agree. Yeah, very chilling effect on free speech.
And that's moving scary, into, though.
But come see my stand-up tour. I'm coming soon to Sunnyvale, St. Louis, and Santa Barbara.
After the show, don't stand too close to Ben.
Can you say where you were?
True. Yeah, that was in Rosemont, Illinois. It was right outside Chicago.
Wow.
You wouldn't have expected. I mean, there's a lot of violence there, but it's usually not political violence.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It was crazy.
Okay, so let's jump back into our stories. And regardless of what we say, please don't shoot us. That would be nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has gotten under the skin of both right wingers and a good number of people who consider themselves near the center in a way that few politicians generally do. But the way that she's been attacked so early on in her career, very often to me, it just reeks of a combination of quite a bit of misogyny, a little bit of racism as well, and certainly some hypocrisy, which we're going to talk about on the program today. So first of all, Vox did a great write-up of some of the examples of people just immediately trying to disqualify her intellectually because of either missteps or things they want you to believe are missteps. Here are a few quick examples. Norm Ornstein says, this is a person not ready for primetime, certainly not ready for Congress, which is news to the majority of her district that voted for. Writing at the Daily Beast, Matt Lewis offered the telegenic it girl of the left some advice. You have the potential for a very bright future. Don't blow it. Take your time. Avoid overexposure. Bone up on the issues. Do the hard work. There's no reason to be in a rush. I don't know if she was in a rush when she was getting her multiple degrees, including in economics. That's odd.
And also maybe the reason to be in a rush is that the republic is at risk of crumbling and our freedoms are at assault every single day. And so it sort of is a huge rush.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We have one more. In one example where people are saying you messed up on a policy, she apparently called Obamacare the premium a tax, which it's not, which I would actually argue with. But Glenn Kessler wrote, this appears to be an example of not understanding policy nuances.
Oh.
I think it's an example of people attempting to pick apart every single word of a woman who has been interviewed 25,000 times since she was since she won her primary. So here's the thing. She is a young socialist Latina woman. And it is possible that our standards for people like that are a little bit different for other people who are more typical of the demographics of elected government, which tend to be white males, typically older. Now, I've been in media long enough to know that those sorts of people have said a lot of really stupid stuff. And I have not often seen editorials saying, well, you know, I think that they have a chance of really making it someday, but they need to bone up, do the hard work, go back down before running again, you know, that condescending sort of stuff.
How old is Charlie Kirk? He's like 21, gets on Fox News every single week.
He has never tweeted something that was accurate. Right. It's never happened.
He didn't go to college, and then he uses that as like, you know, I didn't go to college. That's why I can speak about, you know, the middle class. Like,
and also,
oh my God.
The gumption of saying that she doesn't understand political nuances, and that's why she should stop. We have a president who I don't believe understands the definition of just the word nuances itself, is just so mind-boggling. And over very small mistakes in so it's not even it's arguably not a mistake, right? So she called the Obamacare premium a tax. Well, exactly in 2012, when the Supreme Court saved Obamacare for the first time, it was because John Roberts joined the majority opinion that in fact that the penalty, if you don't pay the premium, is classified as a tax, and that's what saved it. That's what made the law. So we're talking about a tiny shift. It's such a nuance that that I never hear politicians speak with that level of accuracy. To be honest,
that's right.
I mean,
with
AOC, I really feel like, you know, haters gonna hate. This is absolutely a case of haters gonna hate. And they're jealous. And they're jealous that they weren't, they had no idea who she was, that they didn't think she was gonna win, and that it's totally a finger in the eye of, you know, a more establishment, whether left or right, but establishment politicians.
And I think it's also they're trying to knock her down, right? They're trying to undercut her credibility. And that's something that's important because she is out there doing a lot of media. It's very hard to get media heat around some of these socialist ideas that she has, you know, openly socialist ideas that she has, around some of these progressive ideas that she has. They may have nothing to do with socialism. But the point I'm making is that she's smart to take this moment. She's smart to grab the limelight. It's very hard to get oxygen. She's finally got some, and they want to undercut her credibility.
And the fact that so many people have jumped on and want her interview is not because she's telegenic. I mean, look at Sanders. Like, look at Sanders. We've talked about, I mean, he couldn't get onto these shows when he started his race also. But, like, you know, and his unkempt hair and all this, and people love him anyway. But
I disagree. I think I'm a very beautiful man. I don't know what you're talking
That's
about.
That's a terrible, Bernie.
Anyway.
No. But I do think it's like they
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
The reason that so many people are interviewing her, and it's not this like fame whorey celebrity stuff, it's because her ideas, people are thirsty for her ideas. Yeah. And they're surprised and inspired because of so many people being uninspired by feeling like, well, I guess I got to vote for the Dem and there's no other option, the sort of centrist Dem that's been there forever, and I'm not inspired by politics. And wow, you know, so I think so, that's why. So
but before we comment a little bit more, I do want to give a counterpoint, because while she does have great ideas, unfortunately she made a mistake or two, so she's done. She's done. Okay. But it's odd because other politicians have made mistakes as well, or said things that were dumb or crazy or ignorant, and they were not fully disqualified. I'd like to first go to a senator, actually. We're not talking about a congressman. Here is a senator, and here is his argument against the theory of climate change.
In case we have forgotten, because we keep hearing that 2014 has been the warmest year on record, I asked the chair, you know what this is? It's a snowball. And that's just from outside here. So it's very, very cold out, very unseasonal. So here, Mr. President, catch this.
Enough, you're disqualified. Go back down to the Bush leagues and maybe someday you can come back. If we could bring up this next graphic, you're gonna see congressional candidate Sarah Smith pointing out a great quote from Representative Mo Brooks, where he makes the argument that it's not climate change that's gonna lead to the ocean level rising. It's that soil and rock comes out of the creeks and the streams, and that raises up the level of all of the oceans across the entirety of the earth. So Mo Brooks disqualified. Back in the day, George W. Bush said this. This is not like strictly speaking wrong, but it is stupid enough that he should be disqualified. You work 3 jobs? Uniquely American, isn't it? I mean, that is fantastic that you're doing that. He said that to a divorced mother of 3. And look, we could go through 100 examples of this. Dan Quayle back in the day said the Holocaust was an obscene period in our nation's history. I mean, in this century's history. But we all lived in this century. I didn't live in this century. He then took a nap on the ground.
I'm not even sure if he did live in this century, to be honest. He may be one of those fictional characters we were talking about earlier.
But was there ever a Dan Quayle?
But despite the incredible, irrefutable proof that Inhofe there showed that if you can find a snowball, global warming's not real, I think it's hard to counter-argue that. Snow still exists, and so the planet's not warming.
Checkmate.
But I think there's something much more sinister at the base of just some of the sense of why people are so hard trying to take down Cortez, AOC as you call her. Mm-hmm. And it's not, I don't think it's a coincidence that she's a Latina woman, and so much of what the Trump administration has been trying to demonize is Latino people. And I think that's why it is so dangerous of a moment, but also so important and hopeful of a moment in our nation's history right now, that just 2 months away is the midterm elections. Mm-hmm. And it is a defining moment for really which course our nation's going to take. And I think it's such an opportunity that we need to really rally so much harder. Like James Comey tweeted, as a lifelong Republican, he thinks everybody has to vote Democratic in this midterm election just to save the Republic, not because of party or platform, but because the Republicans in Congress have abdicated their duty to put a check on this president who's undermining all of our norms, all of our institutions, all of our values. And so, regardless of what your political stance is, this is a time where you have to decide, is America the country we all believe it is, the words it is in our founding documents, which are that of embracing all people, on the Statue of Liberty, taking your huddled masses who are yearning to be free to come to America? Or do you want to become a country that is now again in its at codifying racism, codifying classism, codifying only allowing white people to continue to climb. What America do you want? That's what has to be decided in 2 months. And I think we're not even fighting hard enough to flip the Senate. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a hard path to flip the Senate, easier to flip Congress. Well, people have had to fight revolutionary wars, civil wars for the values of our country. All we have to do is flip a couple of seats in the Senate.
Knock on a few doors.
Knock on a few doors. Let's just flip both houses. Let's not just have an impeachment that can then embarrass Trump. Let's impeachment and removal from office. We need both houses for the future of the values of our country. Yeah. Not about politics right now. It's about who we are. Mm.
I think we should end on that point. That's a very good point. We're going to take our last break of this hour. But when we come back, Bank of America, suddenly very interested in your documents.
I'm funny normally.
He'll be funny after this.
Mm-hmm. We hope you're enjoying this free clip from the Young Turks. If you want to get the whole show and more exclusive content while supporting independent media, become a member at tyt.com/join today. In the meantime, enjoy this free segment.
Back, everyone. Just a little bit of time for you. One more story, but Ben and Francesca and Mark are here, so we should have a little bit of fun for you. Before we get back to the story, though, I do want to let you know, did you know that at the federal level, the better-funded candidate wins over 90% of the time? Well, now, thanks to the power of applications on your phone, you can actually do something about that by contributing at downticket.com on your mobile device to help even out the playing field a little bit. And I wanted to read one tweet about the story we were just talking about. Mathmagician said, "What the establishment is doing to Alexandria is what they tried to do to Bernie, and it failed spectacularly to the point where they actually had to rig the primary to win. The story is going to end the exact same way, except we're not going to stand for them rigging it." Well, thankfully, in this case, she's won her primary. Everything seemed fairly above board, at least in terms of the actual voting. And it seems almost assured that she will enter Congress. And I have a feeling she's going to enter like a wrecking ball.
Yes.
But we'll see. Okay, one more story.
I hope you don't be naked on a wrecking ball like Miley Cyrus.
Why not?
I don't believe that she will do that.
That would be memorable. That would be memorable.
I mean, Trump would pay attention.
Yeah, he would.
Okay, one more story for you. Earlier this week, we learned that the Trump administration down at the border is actually seizing people's passports because they don't think they're American citizens, despite their inability to present any evidence that these are not American citizens. So that's the government. But now we have banks doing sort of a version of that with the Bank of America. In recent months, Bank of America has been accused of freezing or threatening to freeze customers' accounts after asking about their legal status in the U.S. In July, the Washington Post reported that multiple customers had been locked out of their accounts after Bank of America questioned whether the account holders were U.S. citizens or dual citizens. Now, it's important to note, proof of citizenship is not required to open a bank account in the U.S., according to a spokesperson for the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency. That's the federal agency that supervises branch banking. Banks are merely required to identify and report suspicious transactions and maintain and update customer information. Banks have not received any new instructions to collect more information about customers, for instance, from the Trump administration. And it would seem that if their job was to check for suspicious transactions, I would say you're probably looking in the wrong direction. I would look upward at the CEOs and the corporations. But as of right now, despite those banks saying either not giving statements or saying nothing has changed, many people are saying that they're losing access to their accounts because of questions about their citizenship, despite no legal reason for that to happen.
I mean, you might, I see your point. You might want to look at the top for corruption of these companies, but in defense of policies like this, a lot of people at the top of these companies are not Muslim or Latino, and so that's why they're not doing it.
That's a good point.
Well,
I think you're onto something there.
Right. But if they're foreigners and they've got, like, you know, a bunch of bags with unmarked bills and they just want to dump them and, like, we don't say anything, that's totally cool.
Yeah.
Drug money goes through banks, y'all. I just want to say that in case you missed that.
It's a weird double standard, you're right.
But I just want to say, listen, if you haven't already gotten yourself a credit union, get one, go to one. SF Fire Credit Union, shout out to all the firemen and people in San Francisco. That's where my money is in the credit union. Do it. If you didn't do it after the 2008 crash and the bailout and all that, do it now. It's absolutely important that we boycott these banks and that we actually put our money into our communities. And guess they just don't want our money. Oops.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are regulations and there are laws governing some of this stuff with these huge banks that we bail out if they get into trouble, as Francesca has just said. But this strikes me as another arm of a brutal government policy that we're seeing played out. And I don't know that there are apparently any laws to protect against this policy being implemented. It's ugly. Yeah. That's the only thing I can say.
And I would add that it's incredibly scary, because if banks are able to do this, I mean, at a certain point, what are your rights worth if you don't have some of the fundamental things required to go about your life? Like, having access to your bank account is not like, I'm locked out of my movie pass. That is about as fundamental a thing a person needs to hold down a job, to maintain an apartment, just to go about their life. Like, if you lose access to your money, then you're pretty much done with anything. And banks, apparently, especially under this administration, like, do you believe that they're gonna, like, Larry Kudlow is gonna look at this and say, well, I just gotta fix this tomorrow? It's not gonna happen. This is incredibly scary. And I want to jump ahead actually to graphic 17, because this is it for me for this week on TYT. And I want to leave you with one a bit of news in this area. The banks and the Trump administration want you to believe that fake birth certificates, that's the real scandal, or people who have access to bank accounts when they shouldn't is the real scandal. That's not the real scandal in this area. The real scandal is that a new filing from the Justice Department and the ACLU shows that 497 children remain in US government custody separated from their families. 22 of those children are under the age of 5, and the parents of the bulk of those children, 322, have already been deported. So while I am saying that they're still separated from their parents, other people in the news might say that they're still separated from their parents. It is far more accurate to say that they are permanently separated from their parents. They will never see their parents again. They will never be reunited. So the Bank of America can try to make you scared of people who have access to these bank accounts. Border guards are having their passports taken away. Ooh, they're really scary. No, what's scary is that the government has gotten away with kidnapping permanently, literally hundreds of children. And for the most part, the media in the country has moved on.
Hear, hear. That's so true. I mean, that is the ugliest of the ugly.
Yeah. But the real issue is Alexandria
Ocasio-Cortez
had a couple of tiny little factual errors, and she has to be stopped from entering Congress.
She must be stopped.
Yeah.
You nailed it.
Then we'll get to the children after that.
Or never.
They're going to grow up to be the next AOCs, mark my words.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a pretty good prediction.
We got it.
Okay, thank you guys for joining. Great
to
have you.
Thanks, John.
If there's any other place where people could find your work, feel free to let people know now.
Yeah, please follow me at Ben Gleib, G-L-E-I-B, on social media, and my podcast, Last Week on Earth, on Kevin Smith's Modcast. I summarize the world, politics, news every single week.
Nice.
I've got a podcast called The Edge with Mark Thompson. You can find it on iTunes, and we have a website, edge-show.com, but it's in most podcast places. But it's not on wherever Ben is. We haven't been invited there yet. But The Edge with Mark Thompson, just Google it.
I'm just going to interrupt Mark, because he's going to be the narrator to a feature film that I've just decided I'm writing now based on his voice. And you can follow me at Franny Fio on Instagram and Twitter.
Thank you. There's obviously another hour coming up on the other side of this break. Don't go anywhere. Anna Kasparian's going to be here, and it's going to be awesome.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.